So has this week been helpful for somebody? What? Tell me one thing, Gino, that's been helpful for you. Yeah, so seeing people and having a relationship. Yeah. When worship started this morning and I came and sat down, I teared up right away and I thought, I love my family. I miss you guys. I wish I had been here all week. For who else was something helpful? What was helpful? What was helpful? Yeah. Yeah, so what she shared was just being able to think about the people that were on that list and not necessarily having a really super long list, but having everybody have a few people on their list. And that really covers a lot. That's good. For this week, what's something that's been really helpful? Somebody else. Careful, don't make eye contact with me because I'll call on you. What's something that's been really helpful the whole week? Yes, sir. The paradox of fighting and surrendering. Isn't Chris Miller just a treasure? That guy's really, really cool. There he is, Mr. Chris Miller. I've got to spend some time with him, and yes. Yes and amen. Yeah, I'm watching you too, buddy. I've got to spend some time with him over the years. We actually got a little retreat house that we spent some time with up in northern Wisconsin for like a December a couple years ago. And I need to talk to you about that project because I got something going. And it was so cool to get to spend time just thinking and praying and writing with him. It's just like he's just a treasure in the vineyard. And so I'm so glad you guys got to hang out with him. It's very, very cool. Thank you, Chris. All right. You should have gotten this little booklet. And so these are my notes for what we're talking about next, leadership development. If you did not get one of these, if it did not get passed out to you, raise your hand right now. And we've got some people that are going to run around and give them to you. So right now, keep your hand up in the air. There's a bunch of hands over here. Come on, James. Run around. Go fast, man. I like putting HLIers to work. It's one of my favorite things in the world to do. All right, so now we're talking about leadership development. We're on to the EDLDD, EDL. We're at L. That's where we're at. And we're going to talk about this for the next few moments and then kind of have a little bit of discussion about it. Leadership development is one of those things that you find at almost every single church that's healthy and growing. And leadership development is one of those things that you end up not finding at churches that are stagnating or declining. And so focusing in on leadership development as a leader is really, really helpful. And so I think of this thing as one big continuum, not like three separate deals. Evangelism is like the first step of discipleship. It's like, you know, getting your foot in the door. Discipleship is that continuing deal. And then some of the folks that you're discipling are actually really called to lead specific areas of ministry in the community, in our churches, like wherever God's called them to lead. They're like God has put his hand on them and they're meant to be doing that. And we have to have some kind of consistent strategic way to help people get to the places that God's invited them to get to. And so over the years, the thing that I was taught in the vineyard was this whole IRTDMN process. And so it's just easy for me to remember it that way. Do we have it on the screen? Just put them all on there if you want to, because I think it's just like one word at a time. There you go. IRTDMN. Just stick them all on there. Just all the way through. And so that's what I want to kind of talk and highlight. A few years ago, Phil Stroud asked me just to put that together in a little booklet. So that's what we have. And Multiply Vineyard just bought those and we're giving them to you guys. I just find it really a useful thing to always just have like on the front of my mind that my main job as a pastor, my main job as a leader is to reproduce myself, is to help other people, begin to lead. I never, ever, ever talk about giving ministry away. I think that's a really bad deal, right? To talk about just giving it away. I'm never giving anything away, right? What I'm going to do, and I heard somebody else talk about this and I loved it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to light your torch. Like, I believe that God's given me a torch to carry for my whole life. Here's the deal. I'm never giving that to you. You have to pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Like, I'm not going to let go of the call that God has on my life. Like, I'm going to follow it to the end of my life. So you can pry it from my cold, dead fingers, but I'm not giving it away. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to light your torch. I believe God's given you a torch, and it doesn't look the same as mine, and I'll give you everything I have so that I can light your torch, but I'm going to do mine till I die. And I want to do it till I die with you. Like, I love the whole family part of that deal. And so, like, how do we light that torch? How do we, like, kind of pass on and invite other people into what we're doing? That's where IRTDMN comes in. And in our community, we're IRTDMNing all the time. And people have been IRTDMN'd. Like, we just make the thing into, like, a, I don't know, an acronomic word. I just made that up. So, identify. So, here's the deal. Every single person gets to participate in ministry. Everybody gets to play as a real deal. And so I want to throw the doors open wide. I want to throw the net as far as I can and let everybody participate in ministry. And then along the way, begin to identify what are the specific leadership gifts or what's the invitation that God's given to other people? How do we invite them into play and use more of their gifts? And I never just give it to them all at once, but I just begin to identify the kinds of things that somebody, you know, might need if they were a leader in a specific ministry area to begin to participate. And here's a couple of things I've noticed over the years that help me identify folks. Number one, the potential leaders are often kind of annoying. They're just often kind of annoying. I think Jeff Heidkamp taught me this one, that they're like spotting things, not because he was annoying, by the way. That's not what I was saying. I wasn't saying that at all. But here's the thing is that they begin to notice things that you could do better. They begin to notice, like, you know what, this traffic flow thing could be better. These chairs could be set up a little better. You know, you don't have to tell that joke ever again, Michael. That could be better. Like, they just begin to notice things like that along the way that are just, like, really helpful. And at first, as somebody who's actively leading, you get annoyed by it because you're like, I'm trying the best I can here, instead of realizing, oh, maybe God's actually given them something that could help make the whole thing function better. Like, it's a really good thing. And so, like, learning how to recognize that. And then I think that not everybody is going to be the kind of, I'm just going to put it in basketball terms for a minute, the kind of player that would step out onto the court and say, Coach, put me in the game. I could be a changer here. That there's a few folks at the top of the bell curve that will respond that way. But so what I often have done, figured out how to do, is, like, leave positions open or leave something undone. And notice who notices that thing that's undone. So, like, for instance, on worship teams, if I don't have a bass player, what I'll often do is set up a bass guitar with a bass amp, and then just nobody's over there playing it. And you'll figure out who the bass players are in the room pretty quickly. Because they'll go, hey, how come nobody's playing that? Like, you guys are missing the backbone, the most important part of the band. Where is it? Like, do you play bass? Yeah, I play bass. Hey, do you want to help out next week? Boom. Right? It's great. Like, you look for who notices things. So, for instance, when I'm doing leadership development meetings, like, and I know that 30 people are coming, I will purposefully put 10 chairs over on the side and just set up 20, and I won't have, like, the coffee all set up. And I'll just notice who walks in the room and notices. Some people come and say, hey, Michael, there's not enough chairs set up. I'm like, sure enough. Did you get what I'm saying? I'm noticing who notices what needs to change and then who does something about it. Like, who just wants to be, like, the, you know, the person telling you what's wrong, or who wants to be the person helping to solve the problem? And it just helps identify people really pretty quickly. Now, I don't do that on Easter. Okay? If I have a lot of guests coming into my house, that's not when I do that. I do that more at leadership type things where I'm going to be interacting with people in that way. I don't do that at the newcomers class, you know? Okay. I have had to explain that to people. So, and then the third part of identification is I always have metaphorically in my back pocket a list of jobs. Hey, there's my car rental receipt. A list of jobs that somebody could jump in and begin to participate in. And so the moment that I see some interests, I just invite people in. Right? To begin to participate and play. And everybody gets invited to serve. Out of those who are serving, I have some leadership roles in the back pocket that I can begin to invite them into. That's identification, right? Okay, and then recruiting. I love recruiting. I believe that God is constantly recruiting people into ministry and into leadership. God actively recruited leaders, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Samuel, David. Jesus recruited the 12. Jesus recruited Saul. Here's the deal. when you're recruiting, your absolute worst tool to recruit is the needs that you have. Your best tool to recruit is always vision. And so if you're going to recruit people, you always cast vision. You don't say, hey, who wants to help me in the nursery? We've got like 25 kids. Their diapers are all really messy. You'll get poop under your fingernails. Like, we need help bad. Would you guys come help us? Nobody signs up for that, right? Or the people that you really don't want sign up for that. And so you cast vision. Like, why do we have a nursery experience on a Sunday morning at a weekend worship service? Why do we have that? Because we believe that God loves people. And we want the parents to actually be able to worship God. And if they want to have their babies with them while they're doing that, awesome. But if they want somebody else to love their babies and sing to them and snuggle with them for 45 minutes or for some of you 3 hours while you're doing your weekend worship service, right? Then we want to be able to do that for them. So you cast vision for discipleship and for loving and for, and that kind of stuff. And then you find people that go, wow, that's a place I could do that. Does that make sense? So you're best constantly sharing the vision of why you do what you do will actually help people get engaged in what's going on. And not only do they need clear vision if you're recruiting, but they need a clear job description of what you're expecting. And the job description really helps you later on in the IRTDMN. So you got to have clear vision. You got to have a basic job description. And a job description should never be for a leadership position kind of in the church. Even if you're a senior leader, it should never be more than a page. Right? You don't need every keystroke they're going to ever have to do on a job description. You want kind of just the big picture vision of what you're inviting people into. Right? So big picture vision and then clear expectations in terms of recruiting. When I'm recruiting, I never want to just recruit people to fill a slot and just to get a job done. When I'm recruiting, I am trying to find the very best fit at this time in that person's life for what God's inviting them to do next. I want them to come to me and say, after serving in an administrative area, come to me and say, Michael, I can't believe you let me do this. So we have a food shelf that serves a lot of people, and over the years, the people who have led that have put in a ton of blood, sweat, and tears. Blood because the ceiling used to be real low. It was in the basement of a house, and they were constantly bonking their head against it. And so we actually, in Minnesota, a few people actually wore cheese heads. And it's not because they like the Packers. It's because they were protecting their noggins from the rafters. It was awesome. We found a use for those things. Go Vikings. All right, training. So I want them to find the best fit. Oh, so the story wasn't about the cheeseheads there. The story was actually about, I'll never forget this one couple, Danny and Sue, they came and they sat down, and I thought for sure they were going to quit because they were putting in 20, 30 hours a week volunteering doing this thing. And they came and sat down in my office, and so I'm thinking about, okay, they've been doing this 4 or 5 years, their time's probably up, they're probably moving on to something else, and as volunteer leaders will often do. And they just sat down and they started crying and they said, we can't believe you let us do this. And I'm like, oh good, they're not quitting. Awesome. Right? It's like, that's what we want as people are volunteering. So recruiting is vision, job description, getting them in the right place. Training is really not that complicated. And we've often used in the Vineyard this whole discipleship loop as we're training people to do ministry. And it starts out with you do the ministry. Right? This is how you train people. You do the ministry. And then you do the ministry with them watching, and then you do the ministry together, and then they do the ministry and report back to you, you're watching, you're helping disciple them, and now they go train other people, right? And so you're working through that all the time with people. And in our culture, people will say, hey, as they come to some leadership development and they start hearing about that process, they'll go, you guys discipleship looped me. You looped me. This is exactly what we did. I didn't know we were doing that. And I go, yep, but now you get to go do it with other people. And it's simple. It only takes one hand to explain it. I like things like that. I'm simple. I'm a drummer. I'm sorry, Gino. I thought that was funny. Nobody laughed at all. And the other drummer's going to beat me up. So does that make sense? So you have to do the ministry, and then you do it with them watching you do it, and then you do it together. And this is how I learned how to pray for the sick. This is how I learned how to lead worship. This is how I learned how to preach. This is how I learned how to do everything that I've learned how to do in the vineyard. Because people did that with me. That's the thing that we're doing with them, right? And then deploying is partially covered in that discipleship loop, where now you're beginning to deploy them. Deploying doesn't mean, okay, now I've given ministry away and we're never going to talk about it. We're going to get to this thing. This IRTDMN goes on like forever in your relationship with people that you're releasing into ministry, leaders that you're training up. But deploying is kind of more about finding the right time to begin to engage somebody in leading a ministry area that's the absolute right time for them. If you know you've waited too long when they're coming to you saying, "Coach, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. Like, I want to do this." You know you've waited too long. And one of the ways that I know that I've hit it just right is when they say, "Gosh, I'm really scared. I'm really nervous. But if you think I can do it, I'll give it a shot." Right? That's one of the ways that I know I've hit it just right in terms of timing. That I want them to be really dependent on God. I want them to be nervous about what they're doing. But at the same time, I want them like really teachable and really like willing to learn and grow. And so, deploying somebody into a leadership thing is much more of an art than a science. It's much more of a timing issue. It's much more of seeing kind of what's right for them. Now, there will be people that will be really aggressive and want to go do things, and you just know that you know that they're not ready for it yet. And so that's like a normal kind of thing that can be there. But for the most part, it's like I want to try to invite them into stuff long before they're coming to me saying, you know, that they're antsy and they're ready to go. Does that make sense? Okay, and then the last two is monitor and nurture. And these are two that over the years I've seen just get left out for one reason or another. And so every single leader needs somebody who's coming alongside them and helping to monitor their process, monitoring what they're doing. Is what you're doing working? Is it producing the results that you're hoping it will produce? Like, is your plan for discipleship actually making disciples? Right? Is your plan for evangelism actually, are you leading people to Jesus, or is it just lots of good talk? You know, is your plan for raising up new worship leaders actually working? Is your plan for children's ministry actually caring for these kids? Or are families leaving our church in droves because their kids are like just running free in the basement? Right? So like, what's really going on? And so monitoring I find incredibly helpful after we're kind of getting people to do stuff. It's just follow up with them. And oftentimes I've noticed in churches that people don't want to like do this kind of thing. Partially, maybe because in their work environment, it was done poorly with them. But I think there's really good ways to monitor. And so you look at Jesus, he sends the 72 out, and then they report back to him what went on. That's monitoring. And then he offers this really cool encouragement/correction when he says, "Hey, that's not the thing to celebrate. Celebrate that while you guys were doing this, I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning." You know, it's like he kind of redirects them in that little moment in the Gospel of Luke. And so like you look for ways to encourage, and you look for ways to actually monitor and check what's going on. And what I've noticed for lots of leaders is they haven't wanted to do that, partially because that's more work for us as leaders. It's like I have to think about what I'm trying to accomplish here. All right, so if I'm monitoring somebody, this is just a kind of a side note, something I've learned in the last few years. If I'm monitoring somebody and together we say, well, here's our big goal that we want to accomplish. So let's say we want 50% of the people, or maybe it's for you, 80% of the people that attend your weekend service in a small group. And so I've hired somebody, or I've recruited a leader who's a volunteer who's going to help people get into small groups. And we decide that's our goal, and then we've decided on a bunch of things that we're going to do to try to accomplish that goal. At the end of the year, it's really easy to monitor. I have a job description. I have a vision I've invited them into. We have some tasks that we've decided on that they're going to do, and we have that big goal. At the end of the year, well, if we haven't reached the goal, but they've done all the tasks, they've succeeded. They've done a great job at doing the tasks. The tasks didn't accomplish our goal. Now let's change the tasks. Right? Does that make sense? And so monitoring can actually be this really, when you're doing like a review with somebody, a monitoring thing, you want that to be this incredible act of pastoral care, where you're loving them and you're nurturing them and you're helping them grow, but you're also talking really specifically about the kinds of things that you're doing and is it producing the kinds of results that you want to see. Does that make sense? And then the last thing is nurture. And so, to put on my glasses and turn the page here, but there's this great little passage in Proverbs. Do I have it in my notes? Well, there's the one in Isaiah. Sing about a fruitful vineyard. I, the Lord, watch over it. I water it continually. I guard it day and night so that no one may harm it. There's a great little passage in Proverbs that talks about how a shepherd knows the condition of his flock. And the word in the Hebrew for condition is actually like the facial expression, the face of the sheep. And there's something when you are helping to raise up, helping to IRTDMN, helping to get other leaders engaged in the ministry along with you, there's something that's really vital, really important about being able to actually just look at people and have the Holy Spirit tell you exactly what they need at that season, at that time in their life, to actually know the condition of their life, even by just walking by them and seeing what's on their face, seeing what they're carrying with them. And I just think that's an incredibly valuable thing. Every single one of us needs nurture along the way as we're growing. And in fact, the first time it comes up is in Genesis. The first time this concept comes up is in Genesis chapter 2, I think it's verse 15, where the Lord God put the man in the garden to work it and take care of it, abad and shamar. And that last word, shamar, is the Hebrew word for nurture, to create a nurturing environment, to protect it, to help it grow, to help it become fruitful. And that's the thing that we're called to do as leaders with those that we're training up. So we monitor them to help them be effective at what they're doing, but then we nurture them to help them actually have really good, healthy lives. And so, I'm sure you guys have heard Phil Strout talk about the guy, Pastor Bob, that he knew for years, who always asked him, how is your soul? Like, what's going on in your soul? So being willing to have those kinds of conversations with the people that we're leading, that we talk about our effectiveness, but then we also turn the corner and we just press into, like, so what's really going on with you? How are you feeling? Because we don't want to just use people in our areas of ministry. We don't want to just use them at all. We want them to become the men and the women that God's created them to be so that they could be like incredibly fruitful and happy and successful in what they're doing as well as in their everyday lives. Does that make sense? All right. I've got like 1.5 minutes for a question. Anybody's got a question about this, leadership development or evangelism? We got a quick question? Sweet. Yes, sir. Yeah, so is there a point in the process where you're evaluating whether they should continue the rest of the process? Absolutely, every single point along the way. And so, you know, St. Ignatius made this statement once, and you can read about and unpack it a little bit more in Christian Launay's book, Heroic Leadership, but he makes the statement that every single person is a leader. And when I first read that, I thought, no, they're not, right? You know, Ignatius lived a long time ago. He probably didn't know what he was talking about. I'm so much wiser today. But then as you read through it, then they make this kind of argument. They say every single person is leading their own life. Like, we're all leading our own lives. So we're a leader, even if it's only us who's barely following us. Right? John Wimber used to say, if you want to know if you're a leader, turn around and look and see if people are following you. When you're leading a life worth living, you do end up with people following you. And so my goal is not to necessarily take them out of the process, but maybe to really help them lead a better life themselves so that they have something actually worth following. Does that make sense? So even as I'm taking people through the process and I realize, okay, this person probably can't lead this area right now, rather than thinking of them as a throwaway and I'm taking out of leadership development, what if I thought about them as, okay, they're not as far along as I thought they were. So let's back up a little bit and let's really work on the kinds of stuff that Gino was just talking about in discipleship and help them lead a life worth living. So that's kind of the direction I go with that more. I don't think the human beings are throwaway objects, which is, if you knew me 20 years ago, you'd go, dude, that's not the same Michael Gatlin I knew back then. Because I thought all the human beings were throwaway objects. And so it's amazing what discipleship and this monitoring and this nurturing stuff do in our lives. All right, so let's take the next, 5 to 7 minutes, and let's have a discussion about this. I noticed that some people are really good at some parts of IRTDMN, and others of us, other parts just drop off the radar. So talk about, for you, what parts of the IRTDMN are really strong for you and what parts kind of drop off the radar. And if you want to, put that screen back up so people can see the all IRTDMN while they're having the discussion. And then Gino will get up and lead us in a little discussion on diversity.